So if you're following along with the readings in the Missalette, you may have realized that we didn't use the gospel for the sixth Sunday of Easter, but instead the second reading and the gospel for the seventh Sunday of Easter. And the reason that we're able to do this is because we here, at least in this part of the United States, we don't celebrate Ascension on this upcoming Thursday like many parts of the world do, but rather next Sunday. Ascension is transferred. So we actually never get to hear the readings for the seventh Sunday of Easter, except when we are able to use them in place of the readings for the sixth Sunday. And the seventh Sunday of Easter always has a gospel reading from the 17th chapter of John's gospel. And it's actually one of the most important chapters, probably in all of the scriptures. And so I always feel neglectful if we never hear from that chapter. So I wanted to use that gospel for today from the 17th chapter and talk a little bit about it today in the homily. So I'd like to focus on just this first verse that we heard. This is what Jesus says, and this is sometimes this chapter is called Jesus' high priestly prayer because the whole chapter is Jesus talking to God the Father, and he's praying. And if we listen to the words, we figure out what he's praying about. So this is what Jesus says at the beginning of today's gospel passage. Holy Father, I pray not only for them, but also for those who will believe in me through their word, so that they may all be one, as you, Father, are in me and I in you, that they also may be in us, that the world may believe that you sent me. This is a really packed verse, and I just want to point out some things about it. First of all, who's Jesus praying for? In this passage, he says, Father, I pray not only for them. And who's them? Well, it's the people who were there at the Last Supper with him. These words come from the Last Supper. They're the 12 apostles. So he's in their presence. He's praying. He's saying this prayer out loud. He says, Holy Father, I pray not only for them, the 12, but also for those who will believe in him through their word. So what does that mean? Well, at that same Last Supper, Jesus ordains those 12 to be his first priests and bishops. And so what's going to happen then after Pentecost is those first priests and bishops, the 12 apostles, are going to go out into all of the known world. Matthew to Ethiopia, Thomas to India, Peter first to Alexandria, then to Rome. They're going to go all over and they're going to proclaim the gospel. And people are going to believe in, start to believe and become baptized. And so Jesus is praying for the 12, but he's also praying for all who are going to believe what those 12 say. And that becomes the church then. The 12 apostles with the believers who hear their message, receive baptism, and start receiving the sacraments. So Jesus is really praying now for the whole church, which includes you and me as well. In a special way, I guess, I think of Deacon Nathan here, who will be ordained a priest this coming Saturday. Deacon is from Dassel, so not very far away. It's always a joy to have him, and what an honor for us to have him here with us on his last Sunday Mass before he himself starts to be the celebrant at the altar. It's pretty amazing. So soon, Nathan. So soon. And so after his ordination, then he'll be sent. Fortunately for him, he does get about a month off for vacation. And then he'll really begin his first assignment down in New Ulm. And his job is to witness to the gospel. And he'll do that through his words, but also through his actions and his life. Words don't mean much if they're not backed up with our life and our actions. And hopefully many people will come to believe in the gospel through Deacon Nathan's preaching as Father Nathan, through his preaching and through the way that he lives his life. And so we see how this cycle continues down through the history of the church. That this is what Jesus started at the Last Supper, and we get to hear his prayer that for those first apostles who are going to preach and for the people who will believe their message, and that continues down now through the present age. Jesus continues to pray for his church. He prays for the priests and bishops of the church, and he prays for all the faithful who will come to believe through their preaching and through the witness of their life. So it's good for us to see also what Jesus specifically is praying for. So we know he's praying for the apostles and for the people who are going to be the first Christians and make up the church. But what's he asking the Father for this group of people, for all of us whom he's praying for? He says, I pray for them and for those who will believe in me through their word, so that they may all be one. And if you read the rest of this chapter in John's gospel, it's basically the whole point that Jesus is praying for unity for his church. And why does he pray for unity for his church? Well, he tells us, he says, first of all, so that they may be in us. What does he mean by that? He wants all of the members of the church to experience their union with God in Jesus. As God the Father, Son, Holy Spirit is one, he wants his church to be one in him. But also, he says, that the world may believe that you sent me. And this is really important. He wants them to be united so that the world will believe in him. Jesus is saying that when the world sees the unity of Christians, it will help them to believe in Jesus himself. It's pretty amazing what Jesus is saying here. That our unity then is a sign to the world that Jesus is who he says he is, that he is the eternal Son of God. If that's true, then the opposite is also true, that disunity in the church then is a countersign, that when the church is not united, this means that people have a harder time believing that Jesus is who he says he is. And that makes sense. We have different examples of that. So if we think about the Christian church throughout the world, are we a united church? No, we're not. We're separated, first of all, into East and West. There's an Eastern Orthodox church, and there's a Western church. And that split happened in 1044. It's called the Great Schism. That was the first major split in the Christian church, whereby those Eastern churches, Greek, Russia, parts of the Middle East, where they no longer accepted the authority of the Pope in Rome. And so they started doing their own thing. Their beliefs are so similar, if not almost the same as ours. But we're not united. And then we all know what happened then in the Renaissance period in the Western Church, where we had certain people in the church start to split off from the Catholic Church. So we have the Lutherans and the Calvinists. And now in the Western Church, people estimate that we have tens of thousands, maybe 100,000 different denominations of Christians. Some of them are big, like the church my mom grew up in, which is the ELCA, the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America. Of course, there are other Lutheran denominations, the Missouri Synod, the Wisconsin Synod. But there are also plenty of churches that aren't really affiliated with any larger denomination, where a group of people get together and say, well, we're going to interpret the scriptures in this particular way, and they start their own church, and they start their own denomination. And so, what must it be like to someone who's not Christian, looking in on Christianity and seeing all of these people who claim to be Christian, but who do not believe the same thing in many cases, who disagree about pretty significant things? It seems normal that those people would say, goodness, those Christians, they can't get it together. Why would I myself become a Christian? So we see this kind of on a large scale in the universal church, but we could also say that we see this even within the Catholic Church. How much division there is in our own church. That happens on a few different levels. Can happen, first of all, in the way that we treat one another. If someone's looking at the Catholic Church from the outside in, and they see Catholics speaking badly about others, and they think, why would I want to be a Catholic? That's how Catholics act. Or it could be not so much how we treat one another or act, but what we believe. If someone looking from the outside in at the Catholic Church knows different Catholics who believe all sorts of different things, again, why? That would be confusing then. What does it mean to be a Catholic at all if Catholics themselves aren't united in what they believe or teach? So it seems the reason that the first apostles were so successful in converting the world is because they were united. They were united in love for one another, but they were also united in the faith that they professed. So that even though all of those apostles had different personalities, different ways of expressing the gospel, they never said anything contradictory about God, about who Jesus is, about what the sacraments are, about the moral teaching of the church. They were all in agreement about those things. And that unity in faith and teaching and in love converted the world. It's good for us. I always try to do an examination of conscience whenever I'm reading John chapter 17 and I hear about Jesus' desire for unity in the church. I always try to think about how I, as a Christian, but also as a priest and as a pastor, if I'm always trying to work for unity, if I'm always trying to bring people together, if I'm always trying to listen to my parishioners, but also that I'm trying to teach what the church teaches, the authentic teaching, that I'm trying to celebrate the liturgy as the church intends for it to be celebrated. And of course that I'm treating other people with charity and love. So it's good for all of us to do an examination of conscience today. Jesus wants the whole world to believe because of what people see happening in the Catholic Church. So in our own parish, how can we be united as a parish? How can we be united in mind and heart as a church? That's what is so attractive to people. That's how our church will grow and flourish.